This is the Lansing Fisher Body Historical Team. Today is May 17th, 2006. The time is approximately 9:30 a.m., and we are at the UAW Local 602 Frank Breyer Greenhouse. First, we will introduce the team.
John Fedewa.
Jerry Smith.
Cheryl McCoy.
And I'm Doug Rademacher. Today, we are interviewing Mike Huerta. Will you please state your name and spell it for us?
Michael Huerta. Last name is spelled H-U-E-R-T-A.
And what is your address?
607 Madison in Perry, Michigan.
Are you married?
I am. Recently married.
And do you have any children?
I found out last night we got one on the way.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Where were you born and raised?
Saginaw, Michigan.
What is your education level?
I went to finish high school in Saginaw in 88 and have been going to college on and off for 18 years now. Went through a labor studies program at Michigan State that I really, really enjoyed. Finished that. It's a certificate program. It's not an associate's, but I finished that and about 90% done with an associate's at LCC right now.
Were you in the military?
I have not been in the military.
Mike, what did your parents do for a living?
My biological father retired from Gray Iron in Saginaw, and my stepfather retired from Buick City in Flint, and my mom came to the country and worked as a migrant worker for years, and as soon as my biological father went to Gray Iron, she stopped doing that and raised 7 children.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. What did you do before you hired into Fisher Body?
Immediately before I hired in, I was a chef. I was a chef in Kalamazoo, Michigan for about 10 years.
Why did you hire into Fisher Body?
I actually took a pay cut to come to GM, but I didn't have any benefits, and I didn't like that. It had been forever since I had a chance to go to a doctor or a dentist, and I had a cracked tooth, and it hurt, and I needed the benefits, so I came to GM for that.
When did you hire into Fisher Body?
July 28th, 1997.
And can you tell me, how did you know they were hiring at Fisher?
Probably around 1994 or 5. I think it might have been 95. My brother told me he put my name in to General Motors, and he said, they're doing a lottery style thing for family members. They might call you for an interview. And to tell you the truth, I'd completely forgotten about it. They called me about 2 years later and asked me to come in and take a test, or I can't remember exactly what the first step was, but I came in thinking that I probably wouldn't be selected anyway, and 2 months later they came in and asked me to take the physical, and I did that and figured, once again, I had heard stories there's sometimes lapses between that and the time of hire, but they called me a month later and asked me to come and work, so it happened all pretty fast comparatively to a lot of people's stories.
That's great. I was just going to ask you, do you have any other family members that worked at Fisher? Now, you said your brother worked there. Want to share his name, and did you have any other family members working there?
My brother Carlo worked there for, he worked at GM for a total of 28 years now. But he started at Gray Iron in Saginaw, and he moved, I think, to one other plant. I can't remember where it was, but then he came to Fisher after that. And he's been there ever since, and he's going to go out to the new plant. No other family here in Lansing that work at GM. Just the my nephew works in a GM facility in South Bend. He's South Bend, Indiana. He's a shop chairman of his local down there.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. How old were you when you hired into the plant?
I was 26 when I hired in.
What shift and department did you hire into?
I hired into first shift, the C line. I think it was called Area 50 in trim back then, on first shift. Carol Hill was my first boss.
Had you ever been in an assembly plant before that?
In?
Had you ever been in an assembly plant?
I had been on a tour of Saginaw steering gear before. Grairn didn't let us go in there, like family members and stuff. They wouldn't let you in because it was pretty dangerous back then when my dad was working there. So we didn't get a chance to go into the foundry. And I don't know if I'd have wanted to go into the foundry, but I went on a tour of steering gear when I was young, when I was a little kid in school.
Okay, I wanted to know, would you share with us your first day and what it was like to walk into the facility, to be approached by management, union, and your first vision of the assembly line?
The first day I worked at GM, we did a classroom setting. It was over at an old training facility on Saginaw Street here in Lansing. They basically just told us what we were going to experience and whatnot. There was a strike going on at the time that we got hired, which it was only a week-long strike. I can't remember what was going on. Or we were out of parts. It might have been a Delphi shutdown. It was in... I can't remember exactly what was going on, but there was nothing going on in the plant. No operations were functioning. So we came into a complete standstill. You know, we walked through the plant and nothing was moving. And it was kind of strange, dimly lit, very dimly lit, to see all those cars sitting there for the first time, you know, walking through a vehicle assembly plant, not moving, nobody around, dimly lit. It was very strange. Night and day compared to when you walk in there and the rustle and bustle and the loud noise of normal operations are actually going.
Okay. And the people were on layoff then. They weren't really on strike.
I think that,
so you didn't cross a picket line?
No, absolutely not. No. It was, we were out of parts is what it was. So we couldn't operate. I think it was a layoff, yeah. I don't think they'd hire during that if we were on strike.
Well, you had met your supposed boss, but you didn't have a job yet. Can you tell me the first day you walked in and were given a job, and describe that first day for me?
I was nervous. My brother told me, who had worked there for a long time, and I don't know if things were different or not, but he said, during your first 90 days, you do everything they tell you to do because they can fire you for no reason at all. And he said, be real careful and just... follow the rules and, you know, be on time and all that type of stuff. And I was driving back and forth from Kalamazoo to be on first shift. And I was still working at the restaurant that I worked at previously just in case things didn't work out. On weekends, I was working at the restaurant. So I'd drive to be there at, I think the line started at 6:48 or something like that in the morning. And I had to drive from Kalamazoo. I walked in, we got a very, very brief tour, and things were running at that point. And it was, like I said, the first time I walked in the plant, nothing was running. And when we walked in and it was running, I couldn't believe how loud it was. It really shocked me how much noise everything makes in there. It's kind of overwhelming when you first walk in, kind of looking around, trying to make sure you don't get hit by anything running around you, because most things, you know, aren't going to stop for you. You have to make sure you don't get in their way. We walked up to a boss, and her name was Carol Hill. I had no idea who she was, and she put me on a job immediately covering to relieve someone who was summer help. And he ended up later being a foreman in there. His name was Ben. I can't remember his last name, but he was a pretty nice guy. He was a college kid at that point. And he trained me, and I took over. And I remember the first week I ended up listening to my brother's paranoia, taping my fingers because they were all had blisters on them from doing the job that I was doing, so I wouldn't have to go to medical, and I was worried about getting fired. So I taped my hands up and shut up and put my gloves on so no one could see it before the line started, and was all was very paranoid about getting let go early.
And what was that first job that you did?
I was putting rocker panels on, which is a piece that goes right on the very bottom of the side of the car. It's a plastic molding piece, ground effects looking piece.
And was that difficult to put on, or what tools did you have to do to put that on? What was the process?
It was, you took a big... piece of molding and you clipped it into the you pulled a piece of plastic off of the back of the molding, and then that revealed adhesive, and then you'd put it in the car, it would click in with plastic clips, and then you'd put rubber grommets underneath of it so that water couldn't leak inside of it. And the rubber grommets, you had a tool that was plastic, almost, I don't know what you'd call it. You'd fit the rubber grommet on the end of the plastic tool and then push up with the tool rather than use your thumb or your finger. But it was 100 times easier to use your finger to snap it in. But by the end of the day, after doing 6 on each car, your hands were numb from popping it in with your thumb or your fingers. But naturally, being a new hire and not knowing what I was doing, I decided to do it with my hands because it was so much quicker and easier. But by the end of the day, like I said, I had blisters all over my hands.
And why would you want to be quicker?
I couldn't keep up.
Describe the... So what couldn't you keep up with? What was happening around you?
When I got trained, I wanted to, you know, make a good impression or whatever, bright-eyed young new hire, thinking that I'd get fired if I didn't keep up right off the bat. And, you know, my brother was like, oh, this is a good job. You gotta, you know, don't mess up and, you know, don't go down to medical, stuff like that, unless you really get hurt. So I hopped on the job, did it really fast, and was trying to keep up with the guy who had been there. I found out later, 32 years doing the job. So he knew what he was doing, and he did it pretty well. And he later on, you know, okay, you don't need to cut that out. You can't be doing that. You're going to end up hurting your hand. And, you know, once I was there for more than a day or two, he realized, oh, I'd probably be there for at least a month. So he started telling me, you're going to really end up hurting your shoulder doing it that way. And I was doing these shortcuts to try to keep up with the line. And the line moves pretty quick. When, you know, you first see it, it doesn't seem to be going that fast. But when you're trying to do a job every 56 seconds, I think it was at that, 53 seconds at that point, they go by pretty quick. And that next car sometimes comes way, way too early. And so you end up running up and down the line trying to get caught up. And that's what I did for my struggled with it for about the first week and a half, 2 weeks. And my partner ended up giving me some good advice. And, you know, hey, do it this way, slow down, relax. The harder you try, more often, the worse you're going to end up being. So slow down and just relax and pace yourself.
What did you, obviously you spoke of your partner, that would be the person across from you. What about the people in front and behind you? Did they work with you? Did they help you? Or were you on your own? What was the feeling there?
The car was a little bit raised, so you couldn't really see the people across from you that well. My partner was the guy next to me. It was an every other car job, so it took that long to do each car. It was two people on the job, so I'd do one, my partner would do the next one, and we'd have to, you know, go back and start over and move on to the next vehicle. The guys across the line, you couldn't really see, the car was at your head, like right at your head, so you'd put the rocker panel on at shoulder height. So we could see them between cars and stuff, but they were usually working on the next car. So at breaks were the only time you could really, you know, talk to them a whole lot or during breakdowns. But the guy next to me and my TC was great. I can't remember his last name, but his name was Bill. He was they treated me really, really nice. They were, you know, apparently remembering when they came in. You know, these were first shifters who had been there a long, long time.
What is a TC?
Team coordinator.
Team coordinator, yep. I forgot the name. Team coordinator, he's the guy who will do, if you make a mistake on a car or something goes wrong, he'll do a repair, or if you need to go to medical or take a break or something, go talk to your boss or something, he'll take your job over and he'll relieve you to go do any of those types of things. And sometimes they'll offer advice and help to people who are new on the job and train them too.
I want to round out an explanation. You said your brother told you you were on a good job, and you just described that your partner was next to you. Can you explain more about that? Being on a job that you did every other car, you said the cars were coming at 50-some seconds per roll. So you must have had a nice workspace. Can you just describe the difference of a person that works on every car? Mm-hmm.
That lasted, like I said, exactly 30 days, and I got bumped, which means someone with more seniority than me noticed there was an open spot on day shift, and they put in a transfer, and I went to night shift after that, and it was every other car. There's a lot of workspace when you have every other car. They give you, in the job that I had, there was actually two and a half workspaces, which I think are 18 feet long, and you get, that's a lot of time to do your job, although it necessitates that much space because of the size of the rocker molding and the amount of work on it. It was when he said good job, he meant GM is a good job. The specific job was a pretty good job, but he was more along the lines of don't get fired from GM, because he knew in 30 days I'd get bumped to night shift as well, which was okay with me because I had been in the restaurant business for a long time when I was on second shift for most of my life, actually. But the normal confines of a job are 18 feet in 53 seconds, and you have to get your job done fast. You do your job, you turn around, you grab your parts for the next job in a space of, you know, you can't even use the full 18 feet, because if you do, you'll get down the line and behind. So the two and a half lengths is a nice space, but if you use it all, you have to walk all the way back up the line to start your next job. So that's what I was referring to.
Okay. You just spoke of the 30-day, then you went to the night shift. Do you remember your second job? And tell us what it was like to reach that special 90-day.
My second job, I'm pretty sure I was a utility guy, which is if somebody has a vacation day or if someone's sick, I go and cover their job. So you have to know all the jobs in a specific area that you're assigned to. On second shift for Cookie, he was a boss on the night shift. Eldridge Cook, I think his first name was. Cookie treated me pretty well, being a new guy and whatnot there, and learning all the jobs. Again, I was trying to hurry up and learn all the jobs, so I learned a bunch of them. And what was the second part of the question?
Well, I was curious, did you stay on this utility until you got your 90 days, and what was it like to get your 90 days in? Did you make it?
I made it. I'm in the same department. Oddly enough, I stayed there the whole time, and I liked working for Cook quite a bit, and I liked that area. I ended up working on and off with the people in that area till Fisher closed. I worked with a lot of them for quite a while. It was a good area. 90 days came and faster than you realize. And oddly enough, it fell on my birthday. So I didn't want to be there for my 90th day, but I came in anyway, and the group threw a little dinner for me, and that was pretty nice. You don't realize when you're around, you know, the plant. Sometimes it seems like a lot of the people are gruff and hard, and you know, you kind of got to put up a barrier to protect yourself a little bit in there against the bosses or other people. And when something like that happens, it was pretty nice. That was cool.
Okay. What's the significance of 90 days? What happens at that point?
You attain seniority rights, I believe, is technically what it's called. While you have union representation prior to that, it's a little bit easier for management to say that this person can be disciplined or they can be fired or things like that. And I think also you can put in transfers at that point too and stuff and move around a little bit. The significance of the 90 days for me was that I thought that I didn't have union rights and whatnot before that. You do, but it signified being like a full-blown union member.
Okay. Can you tell me how much longer did you run that second job in Kalamazoo? And you spoke of coming from Kalamazoo to Fisher Body. What was the driving distance one way?
It took me 54 minutes from my house to reach the parking lot. and going about 75, 80 miles an hour. And I don't know the exact mileage. I can't remember, but I remember that time for some reason.
So 100-mile round trip every day. Mm-hmm. How long did you do that, and then how long did you work the second job?
I worked the second job on and off. My stepdad got sick late that year, in 97, so I was going back to Saginaw from Kalamazoo to Saginaw, and I was living with my brother during the week here. But the second job, I worked maybe once a month, and then the restaurant ended up closing down, and I went and worked the last day, which was a lot of fun there. Just as the owner wanted me to come back and, you know, come and work the last day, and all the regulars were going to come in. But that lasted 2.5, 3 months, probably 3 months. But once I got the 90 days, I stopped working fairly regularly there, maybe, like I said, once a month. And,
that was that, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. So, did someone break you in on that job as you went, or how did you learn jobs? You just go up and stand and watch people, or how did you learn a job?
The utility job actually was the other utility guys. What would happen is Cook would say, go cover one of the other utility guys, and I'd go and start learning their job, and eager to get off the line, they'd hurry the process along of training, and they'd say, you gotta, when you're a utility guy, you gotta be able to pick up a job fast, and all this nonsense that I learned later. But they just wanted to get off the line, and be able to go, you know, relax or whatever. But I basically watched, and then started doing a part of the job. Every car, you know, do a small section of it. And as you got better at that, you'd pick up jobs a little bit faster along the way.
Do you remember the people you hired in with? Or did you come in alone? You said a group of people walked through in the dimly lit building.
Yeah,
do you remember those people?
I do. I remember some of them. Some of them ended up leaving. Some of them went to different plants. I remember oddly enough, I don't remember a whole lot of... I don't work with a whole lot of people that I hired in with anymore. I don't know what happened to them along the way, but I know a lot of the people that hired in the same year as I did. Well, when you get on second shift, it tends to be a lot of the same seniority, or at least near the same seniority. So when I was in trim shop, it was a lot of the same seniority, 97s, 95s, 96s, and... we all kind of get forced to the same areas and the same spots because of seniority.
Okay. Were there any new hire initiations or pranks? And if so, did you get to deliver those back at any time?
I never delivered them back, but they always, the guys I've worked with on first shift especially, were real eager to tell me about my Christmas turkey and the Thanksgiving turkey at the hall that I had to go pick up. They kept telling me, don't forget that. Naturally, having a brother who worked there for many years, he told me don't listen to any of that. I don't know if anybody actually showed up over there to get their turkey, but that was one of the big ones. Go get your turkey at Thanksgiving, it'll be there. Yeah, you got to show up early though. You know, get there early in the morning, and they tell you all sorts of things to have you sitting out there in the parking lot waiting for the hole to open and get your turkey. I never perpetuate that, but they I'm sure they still do. I haven't seen a new hire group in quite a while, but I'm sure they still do it.
Anything on the line? Something you remember?
In the shop, I don't know where it comes from, but I think the coordinators can order hand lotion, and after the first break of being there, they filled my gloves with hand lotion, and you come back and you throw your gloves on, and it goes sliding all over your arm, and you're covered in hand lotion for the rest of the day and all greasy. So that was a big one.
Okay. You've described some of the things, the environment, the trim department. Did you work in any other of the departments?
I worked with I worked in body shop for maybe 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks before I got laid off 1 year. They were ramping up, I seem to remember. There weren't cars. There weren't consistently cars. It was a slow down mode or something along those lines. And I didn't work a whole lot there before we got laid off again. But one significant incident in body shop, I was told it was an off the line job. We were putting pieces in a robot that did welding for us, and you'd put the piece in, and you'd step back, and you'd hit a button, and it would deliver welds, spot welds, all over the piece. And I'd grab the piece after the robot was done, and I'd hang it, and it would automatically deliver it to the line after I hung the piece. And my brother walked by, and he's like, "Oh, hey, he worked in the body shop." He was shocked to see me there, and he said, "Hey, man, be careful. This metal's really, really sharp." And yeah, whatever. You know, I touched it. It's not sharp. And I was like, "This isn't that bad." So I kept working. Later on in the day, somebody asked me what happened to my sweatshirt, and I looked down, and my sweatshirt had a huge slice across the front of it. For me hanging these metal pieces that I thought weren't so sharp. There was a big giant hole in my sweatshirt from rubbing it across that I hadn't even noticed. And it went through the t-shirt underneath as well. Somehow it didn't manage to cut me open, but it just went right through my clothing and I didn't even notice. But that was one of the things I remember about the body shop, and I'm like, get me out of here. So I got out of there fairly quick.
And you worked in trim when you hired in, and you saw the body shop. Your brother was a regular down there. Can you describe what's it look like in the body shop compared to the trim shop?
In the trim shop, it's very well lit. They have to notice scratches or mutilations and stuff in the very final process before it was shipped across town to the final assembly. So they have to notice defects, colors of carpets, colors of seat belts, the various colors of trim. So it's real bright, very well lit. You can wear shorts, you can wear t-shirts, and for the exact reason I was describing before about the sliced open sweatshirt and t-shirt, you can't wear shorts and t-shirt. I think you can wear t-shirts, but you can't wear shorts in body shop. But it's very dark in body shop. The first time I walked in there, I thought trim shop was loud when I walked in there, and it got even louder in the body shop. There's a lot of welding going on. There's a lot more robots doing welds and different various processes out in the body shop. A lot of robotic carriers. It's a completely different world. It's very different. It looks almost futuristic in there, cars floating around in the air on carriers. It's sparks flying everywhere from the welding going on. Even when no one's around them, you can't see people. The robots are doing the welds sometimes, and there's just sparks flying. And if you're not familiar with the area, you can get lost and kind of freaked out pretty easily. Which I got lost in there for about an hour one time, the first time I worked down there.
Do you view your coworkers as brothers and sisters, and at what point did that happen?
That's a great question, and it happened at a specific point too. When I got hired at GM, I always thought that I saw my dad working in the foundry, and I saw my stepdad working at Buick City, and I thought the years they put in there were hard on them. My stepdad was nearly deaf when he came out. My dad worked in the foundry for 35 years, and that's hard time. It's awful in the foundry. But when I came in, I'm like, I'm going to get my degree and I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to go to school and finish. You know, I don't want to have a physical toll on me like it did them. And they told me the same thing. Do that. You know, get your degree and get out if you can. It's a good job, but if you don't think it's for you, get your schooling done and move on. So that was my intention when I hired in. And I hired in July of 97. In December, my stepfather passed away. I went into work that day. It was either that or sit around the house, you know, beating my head against the wall. I went into work that day, told my boss, and everybody just immediately, you know, you all right? My TC came and relieved me basically all day. You know, you want to come when you feel like you can work, come back. He worked all day on the line. When I came back after my bereavement, they had a card with money and stuff for my mom. And immediately after that, that was right at that point, I thought, okay, I get it. Prior to that, I don't think I'd really, you know, you see the donations and, you know, occasionally they'll have the United Way signs and things like that, but that was when I really understood.
Have you developed friendships that extend outside of the plant from your workers?
Absolutely, yeah. I developed many. I met my wife in the plant. We got married in this past January. I was thrown on a job. I had noticed her. I didn't really know who she was, but I was thrown on a job for a day, and I worked across the line from her. 8 hours flew by in about 10 minutes. About a week later, I asked her for her phone number so I could ask her maybe to dinner sometime, and she asked if I was serious, and I said, what do you mean, are you serious? And she said later she was just surprised that I wanted her phone number. And we ended up going out, and like I said, last night we got some good news.
Very good news. So you found romance and love in the assembly line.
And her dad worked at the plant too. I recently got to sign his retirement papers for him. But he worked in body shop or in paint shop. He told her, "Don't you ever date anybody from the plant," which is hilarious. And she always swore that she wouldn't either.
And has that opinion changed of him since he's met you?
Absolutely. When I 5 years after we started dating, I went to his house to ask for his daughter's hand in marriage, and his first response was, "It's about damn time."
Explain a day. What did you do for your lunch breaks?
After I met my wife, Dee, I went and sat with her, talked to her every break I could during the courting process, and she worked there for probably 2.5 years after we started dating. Then she finished her degree and she moved on. But when she was there, I'd go eat lunch with her almost every day, for sure. But before I met her, I read a lot, sat down at they have picnic tables in break areas in the plant. Sometimes we'd have dinners together, our groups, our teams would have dinners, and you know, somebody's birthday, somebody's retirements, there's a holiday coming up, or any excuse to show off your cooking, flex your cooking muscle. Everybody liked to do that, and as someone who cooked for a living, I like to taste other people's food, so I enjoyed that too. I had tried to tell as few people as possible that I was a cook, because they automatically volunteer you to do everything. But we spent a lot of time doing that. You talk to, you know, there's a lot of rumors that fly around the plant, and breaks and lunches are good for those types of things.
Okay. So you did participate in the departmental dinners. You were sharing these holiday ones, or these every year in this. What was that like?
Virtually every year. I don't remember a Christmas or Thanksgiving going by without having one. And, we'd do them for Easters and birthdays and any type of congratulatory event that people wanted to break bread with each other. That was a camaraderie thing, very much. Almost making it more familial in the plant, and I enjoyed that a lot. And it really did, you know. You're here in this mechanized, you know, vast area with all these machines, robots, guns, but come break time, everybody returned back to neighborly, you know, let's sit down and eat lunch or relax with each other.
You spoke about breaks and lunches being a chance to check up on rumors. What kind of rumors would happen? What do you mean?
Unbelievable. I was always of the belief that never believe them because they can't possibly be true. Oh, there's a breakdown in paint. We're going home early. There's going to be a layoff, or there's going to be everything from we're going home early to so and so got fired, or the rumors were fast and furious, and you usually ignored them until something in writing came out, or until you actually saw certain things happen.
Was there a particular day of the week where the rumors really flew, you know?
Before Christmas, the week or two before Christmas, there was always talk of layoffs or there's going to be extra times off. And there were a couple periods in the last few years where there were week layoffs here and there. And those spurred rumors big time.
There's also, while you're working, it's you said the factory, the noises. Did people have radios?
Absolutely. That was a saving. That probably saved saved my life. I love listening to music. I'm a music freak. The last year or so, I worked with a really good group, and we all had a very eclectic music taste, so we all listened to each other's music without any bickering, and sometimes there was bickering amongst people who didn't like each other's music if you had a partner that didn't like your various CDs or whatever. But we'd bring in CDs, and we'd play the radio, and everybody was very patient with each other. We'd listen to each other's music, and sometimes we had turned on to new music and enjoyed each other's musical tastes as well.
You said you were a chef. Can you tell about implant vending? Did people bring products in? Can you share any stories about that?
One of my favorite things about being on first shift was Nacho. He was a skilled trades guy in trim who'd bring in his wife's burritos, breakfast burritos in the morning, and being away from mom for a while, I missed her salsa and her burritos and chorizo in the morning. And when I first came on to first shift, I saw people walking around with these wrapped in foil, and I asked my partner, hey, what is that? And he told me that Nacho sells burritos right around the corner in the morning for breakfast. And so I started getting there early so I could get Nacho's burritos because they ran out. And That was absolutely one of my favorite things about first shift. I'm not a first shifter at all. I'm not a morning person, but that drove me to even arrive early from Kalamazoo to get there for Nacho's breakfast burritos and his wife's salsa. And there's other stuff at night, but nothing can compare to that.
Did you have a skilled tradesperson? Did you ever befriend one? Did you ever have a tradesman do something special for you? And what did you think of skilled trades compared to the line assembly?
I didn't really know a whole lot of skilled trades guys. I really, you know, didn't know. I knew they covered large areas. I didn't really, you know, I worked on jobs that had tools that were constantly messing up, so they'd have to come out a lot. Sometimes the torque wouldn't be right on the bolts I was putting in, so they'd have to come and fix the tools or adjust the tools. But I was moved around quite a bit, all over trim, so it would be different skilled trades guys that I'd always see. And I didn't really get to know any of them too well, but they all seemed pretty nice to me. You hear a lot of people talk bad about them, but I don't get that. I didn't see anybody maltreat me or, you know, anything like that.
You said you had a goal, you were planning on getting your education and getting out, and you said your wife achieved her degree and left. Is that still your same goal, or what's your feelings today?
I had a completely different view of the Union when I came into the shop. When I came into the shop, I had, you know, no idea what the Union was all about, and I started... Marta Bobbio one time came up to me with a piece of paper. I didn't even know who she was. I had never met her. She had asked my brother if he wanted to participate in a Latino labor conference that they put on in Ann Arbor. And he said, take it to my brother. He'd probably be interested in that type of thing. And I had never met Marta. She walks up to me and she says, sign this. And I said, my name's Mike. How are you? And she said, good. My name's Marta. I'm a friend of your brother's. Sign this paper. I'm going to see if we can send you to a labor conference. And I said, what do I have to do? What is this? I didn't know what it was. I had no idea. I was just there kind of floating my time and, you know, going to school and ignoring everything about me, really, you know, around me, excuse me. So I signed it, and I got to go to this conference, and it really fired me up. I took a basic union class, a union awareness class, and it lit a fire under me big time. I came back, reported to the membership, thanked them. I was excited. And immediately following that, I started becoming active, going to the meetings, going... I didn't know a whole lot of people in Lansing at that point. I didn't know anyone but my brother, really, and his wife and my nieces. So I sat there and I read... my brother gave me copies of the contracts. He gave me, you know... he was an alternate committee man at that point. He gave me some of the paperwork of committee men and stuff, and I started reading it. And I don't know why, but I found it interesting. And so I started getting really involved in the union. And as far as I'm concerned, I'd love to stay here 30 years and plus. And possibly, I don't know exactly what position I want, but I'm all about being... serving my membership now. I love. I don't know what it was about that first conference. I met Ray Zamora and we sat up till 6 in the morning talking. Ray's passed now, but I didn't even know he was a member of 602 at the time. We sat up talking till 6 in the morning. The next day, I found out he was a member of 602, and I was shocked, and I saw him at the next meeting, and that was great. But ever since then, I've just stayed involved, and I don't plan to stop.
Okay. Mike, you worked in the body shop and the trim department. What made a good or a bad supervisor for you?
I had a lot of supervisors. I got bounced around for quite a while. It was a period of time where the job bank was being utilized to help training, supposedly, but they moved us around a lot, and I that's when I started to get really knowledgeable about the contract and discovered that I was being misused quite a bit. But the bosses, I guess, were willing to use us however they could and whatever made their lives easier, which was, you know, we're going to take, I'm going to put you on this job, and I'm going to take my people and free them up so they can have a day off or go home and things like that. I thought that was garbage. I didn't care for that, and because of that, I got into arguments and got into incidences with several supervisors. Cook, again, knew me from back when I hired in, so he was one of the few that wouldn't really misuse me a whole lot, but I didn't, other than Cook, I didn't know a whole lot of second shift supervisors before I started to get moved around like that. So I never really got a chance to establish a relationship with anybody other than Cook until the second time that I worked for, third time that I worked for Carol Hill. And Carol Hill had been in the plant for a long time, 30 years at that point, 28 years at that point. And she was an old school supervisor, and I didn't, and I was becoming incredibly active in my union, and she didn't care for that, and I didn't care for her style, and we clashed a lot, but there was a respect factor between us two, where she knew that I knew what I was talking about, but she was going to try to have her way anyway, and I said, do what you want, but, you know, you're going to have to pay people for it, or, you know, we're going to file grievances against you, and you'll lose. And she understood the consequences of doing things her way, and she knew that I would take her to task for it. But, there's a certain amount of things that they have to do to keep things flowing in the plant, but there's a way to do it. There's a contract laid out for them. There's also been a lot of contract supervisors that don't understand the contracts, and they're not trained with the contracts. Cook was probably my favorite supervisor, and when he broke the rules, he knew he was doing it, and he was fully willing to make up for that later.
Well, today is May 17th in 06. The plant closed May 5th, 05. I'm going to have you run a few thoughts and some feelings. What was one of your best memories of Fisher Body?
Me and my wife. I think that day that I worked across from her, when I knew her vaguely. We, you know, said hi to each other and stuff like that. And I didn't know what her full name was. I didn't know her last name. I don't think she even knew my name. But meeting her and spending that day across the line from her was probably the best day there.
What was your funniest moment? Do you remember anything that happened that impacted you or many people around you or something?
I like to have fun when I work. I mean, the guys, when I get to know a team and we enjoy each other's, you know, strange sense of humor, I like to have a lot of fun in the shop. Even though we're working and, you know, we got a job to do, you can still have fun with each other and joke around. If you get a good partner, that's a, you know, you work, you got to stare at each other for eight hours every day, sometimes nine. So you got to have fun. The last team I was with, we joked around constantly. That probably 6-7 months together was there's no specific incident I could point to, but those I developed friendships with those guys, and even after the shop closed down and we went out earlier, we were all lower seniority. We hang out probably 2-3 times a month at every meetup. We're all of us are from even different cities, but we all meet up in Lansing and get together and hang out for a few hours at least once a month.
What's your saddest memory of working in the plant?
The day I came in when my dad died.
Being Hispanic, did you feel any discrimination? Did you face that in there? And can you share an incident?
Not towards me, that I specifically remember people singling me out. But it doesn't matter where you are, you know. There's incidents. I saw some things I didn't like, and I'm not the kind of guy to sit on the sideline and just let stuff fly by. So you know, I very much vocalized that I didn't care for people saying the type of racial slurs, or, you know, it happens a lot, no matter where you are. But people shouldn't have to work in that type of spot. People shouldn't have to deal with that for 8.5-9 hours a day, every day. People shouldn't have to think about it before they go into work for a couple hours every day. Oh, I got to go deal with so-and-so who's going to call me this or that, who's going to, you know, who hates me because, you know, not even knowing me. That's an awful situation for anyone to have to work in. And I saw it. I didn't have it done to me. Maybe people know, you know, he's not going to, you know, I can't say this crap around him. But they would say it about other people in other cultures, not necessarily Mexicans or Hispanics, but people sometimes can be harsh to each other. And I don't like it. And I don't like to tolerate a whole lot of that going on at all.
Did you see that in gender also?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it was more so to women are subjectified in that place more so than I think racial. There's a lot of racism everywhere, but in a auto production plant, I think sometimes ladies take a much, much bigger hit. What are you doing in here? I heard all sorts of nonsense in there. Sometimes, God, I feel like I'm in the 30s. Some of the nonsense people spout out. But, I don't like to tolerate that either. And, to see, how going through the rich history of women in the auto industry is insane that still goes on. During World War II, the country would have been a mess without the women's workforce in our auto industry. So it's not only silly, it's ignorant for that to still be going on.
You said you taped up your fingers early on in the interview, cut your shirt. Did you ever get injured badly or see anyone else injured badly?
I saw a guy, I can't remember what happened to him, but he just completely fell. There was a thing called an ergo chair that went in and out of every car, and they would tighten down brake pedals, and you sat down in this chair, and it would kind of float you around, and you could fly, go in and out of every car with it, and you carried this torque gun, and you torqued the brake pedal down. And I think he pulled several muscles in his back at once, and I never heard anybody yell like that, but he started yelling, and he was in the car at the time, and the line shuts down if the chair goes beyond a certain point, and he ended up being all right, but at the time it seemed pretty severe. Luckily, I've heard a lot of stories about some really nasty incidences in the shop, and I've never had to see any of them. Though I've had some minor injuries, tendonitis develop over repetitive stress stuff, but luckily nothing too severe yet. I'm gonna knock on wood, even though I'm not supposed to. Not yet. No, I'm lucky that way.
The knocking on wood that's pertaining to the disc that we're reporting on, not any other reason.
Right.
Lansing was known as the capital of quality. Why do you think that was called that?
Workforce. Absolutely the workforce. Sometimes in a building that was originally occupied by the Durant brothers, we had substandard equipment, substandard conditions. I remember being rained on in the plant. I remember standing in puddles of water. Just inexcusable sometimes lack of safety in certain instances that were addressed by our safety people, but sometimes, man, that building was interesting. The pipes were funny. I mean, everything from the bathrooms acting weird to the trim shop flooding out when it rained was interesting. And then we put out that kind of quality. That says something about the people that go into that shop every day. We weren't asking for much, but you give us a chance, and you're going to get the best. You're going to get the best thing on the planet. And we're often number two or number three with the worst possible scenario working conditions we'd produce. That's why we got a new plant.
You said you went to a conference, came back energized. Did you attend union meetings, and how often?
March, I'm a college basketball junkie, so I don't go to the union meeting in March. March Madness is going, so I don't go to that one. But I try to make every union meeting. I didn't go to my last union meeting because I was at a wedding reception for me and my wife. But
Your own wedding reception, I guess that's a good excuse.
I didn't ask to be excused, but people understand. I try to go to every meeting, not necessarily because I have to. I'm not elected to any position. I'm not yet appointed to any position. I don't have to go to my union meetings. I want to. I like the people who show up at the union meetings. I like the leadership we currently have. I went to the union meetings under the leadership we previously had, who I had a lot of problems with, but it didn't matter. It's my union meeting. It's my union. I'm responsible. Same way I get very involved in local politics and state politics and national politics. This is my country. I have an obligation. I feel I have an obligation to help run it. And I feel there's maybe 100 of us that run things at the hall because we bother to show up. And, you know, good or bad, that's how things are. I wish that we couldn't fit everyone in our hall every union meeting. I wish people cared that much about their future. But, you know, here we are, and we're gonna do, you know, what we think is in the best interest of the memberships, and I got no problem showing up and helping.
You said you've already described that your union involvement has changed over the years, mm-hmm. And where your drive is. Do you participate in union sponsored activities?
Oh yeah, yep. I am on the Citizenship and Legislation Committee. Right now I'm really, really involved with that. I'm on the Community Service Committee. I have in the past been on the Strike Committee, the Election Committee, the Education Committee, and I think that's it. I can't remember them all, but I've been involved with quite a bit. I ran for alternate committee man twice. I've ran for trustee and union label chair. I ran, and that's it. I think that's all I ran for. And I haven't won once.
That's part of getting there, getting your name familiar, and stay at it. You probably do, but have you voted in union and political elections?
Absolutely. I voted in all the union elections, political elections as well. And I started getting really involved in politics as I furthered my education, as I kept the Michigan State Labor Program. Danny Hoffman, again, he's gone now, but Danny Hoffman really also got me fired up about politics. I can point to specific spots where I got fired up about certain issues, and the Latino Conference fired me up towards my union, and Danny Hoffman fired me up towards politics, I think. I had always had some interest before then, but I think that's what really fired me up towards politics, and I got pretty involved in the last probably two or three national elections. Helped a lot with the Kerry campaign in 2004. And I'm currently in the midst of helping a lot with the Martinkowski campaign in Michigan, and doing a lot with the legislative committee. So.
You do something else with the legislative committee. What responsibility do you take on for that?
I started doing a newsletter. Sometimes there's legislation that'll go into effect that once legislation is brought to the Senate floor or House floor, it'll be through within a week before we even know what happens. Often, and I don't know if that's on purpose. I personally think it is, but sometimes we need quick ways to get to our members and tell them, hey, this is going on, this is anti-worker, this is, you know, this is nonsense. We need to call our representatives or our congresspeople or write them a letter. I started doing an email newsletter update type thing, probably once every three weeks, maybe three and a half when I'm busy. But it's gone over pretty well. I've done, I think, 9 or 10 issues so far. There's 160 or 70 people on it. Started off as, I think, 11. So 4 countries, 6 states, which is pretty weird.
Well, you're a young man, and you're into the new technology, and it's nice to have you on board there. We're going to go to benefits. What's your most appreciated bargain benefit?
That's a tough question. We got a lot of killer benefits. That's what brought me to GM.
I got that tooth fixed.
I think we have to wait 8 months for dental, and I was the day I had dental insurance, I went and got it fixed, and my dentist was laughing at me. But I'd have to say, you know, the health benefits. I don't have kids yet, but as soon as I do it, that's probably health. The health insurance is going to be the biggest one. But to this point, it's been the tuition reimbursement. I think I've used that a lot. And I don't plan on stopping using it. I said previously that, you know, I thought that once I finished my degree, I'd just move on. But I don't think so. I think I plan on maybe finishing my associates, moving on to the bachelor's, and maybe running for local spots. We need more union representation in our local political areas, school boards, city councils, stuff like that. That's something that I'm political science is my major, so that's something that I see myself doing in the future.
This is kind of going back a little bit, but what is White Shirt Day and what does it mean to you?
What does it mean to me? To me, like, I don't know, I think of these things different. I'm a history freak too, so like on Veterans Day, I'll sit down, you know, grab an old history book or a Howard Zinn book and sit down and read, you know, some history on the particular day, if it's Memorial Day, Veterans Day, whatever, read Poppies in Flanders Field and sit down and think about that for a while. White Shirt Day, I think, you know, I think about this is the day we celebrate being on equal footing. This is the day we're supposed to wear, in my opinion, button-down white shirts to signify that we're on equal footing with management. That all those people from Eugene Debs, all in the late 1800s on to this point have fought for, we got it. We got it at that point. The Reuther brothers, all those people along the way who gave their lives and stuff too. This isn't just a, you know, sit at the table and bargain with management. There's been people who lost their lives over this stuff. So I like to think about all that stuff. Reflect on it. You know, a lot of people don't even know about it. So when I was in the plant, I'd print off stuff from my computer and bring it in and leave it laying around. And luckily, that last group, we were pretty tight. We'd eat beans and toast and kind of think about I'd read it. Last time I was in, I read a little quote from Victor Reuther. Victor Reuther. And we ate that at break, and I passed on a little bit of the history to those guys who were actually lower seniority than me, believe it.
Do you participate in community activities outside of the plant?
Yeah. During community service, when I was in the job bank the recent time, we got to go out on community service. I hopped over to, I got crazy going and sitting in the jobs bank, so it snowed real bad. And we had Lyle Birchman call Meals on Wheels and asked if they had any problems getting to the older people's houses. Because of the amount of snow we got, and they said, yeah. And so three or four of us volunteered to go shovel sidewalks for the elderly people who couldn't get out of their house and were homebound and stuff, and were having meals delivered to them. So we went and did that, and then I noticed, they have a kitchen. So I asked if they needed any help in the kitchen, and they did, so we stuck around there, and I still go back today, even though I don't have any obligation to go. We'd put in long weeks there. We even helped with fundraising on weekends. On occasion, they had a walk. The director was at my wedding reception of Meals on Wheels, so she's. We've become very good friends. Some of those people. I walked in there the other day, last week, and they have our picture still on the wall from when we were volunteering there a year and a half ago. We made some good friendships there. It was very cool working with those people and watching what they do with absolutely nothing. They have no funding. Again, here comes the political freak in me. The current administration has cut back on their funding, so they work with nothing. They work with donations, local people giving grants, or even the building they operate out of is donated, leased to them for next to nothing. And I'm on the community service committee too, so I do other things as well. But Meals on Wheels is the one I mainly. Mainly, I do toys for tots and stuff too, but Meals on Wheels more.
Mike, they call low senior. You got quite a few years in, actually, but you worked in the Fisher plant. It's being torn down. What is it? Tell me that feeling. What's that mean to you?
I drove into the Union Hall parking lot. It must have been a month ago. I don't remember. But it was the first time I saw them actually with the cranes and that big, there's a big clipper thing that shreds metal. And I opened my car door, stood there for probably 35 minutes. Just, I couldn't believe it. You know, it's going away. You know, since I hired in, there's been rumors and, people talking, oh, yeah, they're going to close this place and this, that, and the other thing. But, it slowly became reality, and here we're closing the plant. But seeing it being torn down was weird. You know, like I said, to think about the Durant brothers operated off of that site. It has been so many different things over the years. It's just wild to hear even some of the retirees come into the Union Hall and talk about. Yesterday, I got stopped in the parking lot from a guy who worked there for 42 years. Why'd they stop tearing it down? I don't know, but I hadn't noticed. But it was bizarre to see it. A piece of I haven't lived in Lansing that long, but probably a piece of Lansing going away. And they're gonna have to dig it out and take it away. And I don't know if that's necessarily bad or good, but the having a Fisher body gone, another Fisher body gone, is a big deal. It's going to be strange to drive past that point when nothing's there. The big green monster, I always called it, but it's going to be strange to drive past it and not see that.
Someday with your children, won't be able to drive by and say, I met your mom in there. We have a new General Motors has invested a lot of money in this new plant. The people that are going to listen to these interviews have never seen assembly plants. Talk about real briefly, what do you think of this new plant, and what do you tell college kids about auto industry?
That's a two-part question.
Oh, yeah.
The first part, I've only been to the plant once, the new plant, excuse me. I've only been in once, and it was this past Friday. Kind of a class reunion atmosphere when you walk in. You see everybody you haven't seen in a while. The old gang, everybody's getting ready to go back to work. But a friend took me on a little tour of the General Assembly part of it. It's amazing. It's completely different. Somebody a while back said it's going to be the most... technological advanced plant in the world, and it seems like that. It's crazy. You walk through the platforms, rise to you, so you can work on things rather than you bending and twisting to get inside the cars or work on the cars. It really was amazing. It looked completely different. So why seeing the advancements that have come along rather than working in the 100-year-old 100-and-something-year-old building is pretty amazing. Yeah. It's great that they made an investment in us. I think it's gonna pay dividends for them in the long run. You hear a lot about the company doing poorly and whatnot, but our futures are tied, so we have to help them, and they have to help us. And I think having us working is an advancement for them. It will help them, no matter what we're building. So, It's good to see that. I haven't seen the rest of the thing. It is enormous. I couldn't believe how big the facilities were. I only got to see the one little General Assembly area, and not even all of that, but it's huge. You pull in the parking lot, and you're like, my God, this thing continues forever. So it's brand spanking new, shiny. They're still not done. You have to wear hard hats and orange vests because there's still construction, but it is amazing to see what's going on out there, and it's exciting. It's exciting. We're getting rewarded for working in that old building forever. So that'll be exciting when that finally gets rolling, too. I'm excited to go out there. Now, as far as the what do you tell college kids about the auto industry, I took two economics classes recently, and the economics teacher and I would have a little bit of banter going on, exchange going on about... he'd talk about how the economy's doing great and how everything's fine, and I'd say, well, that's a statistical outlook. What do you see in reality? And everybody would turn their head towards me like, oh, who's this nut job arguing with the teacher? And the teacher and I would, after class, go sit down and have coffee for a couple hours talking about those realities, and it's a different class, as he put it. He said, I can teach you what's going to be in your book, but what you're asking me are different things. You're talking about socio-political and a different thing. And I said, but you shouldn't be, I quite frankly told him you shouldn't be pushing nonsense, because that's what you're telling people. Everything's rosy and the outlook's great. No, it's not. You're talking about a quarterly interest in the next 3 months. What are the next 3 months going to be like? That's what you're doing, and that's a horrible outlook. You're an economist. You should be thinking further down the road than that. Cyclical. These things tend to happen, but this is beyond cyclical. So that was interesting. And again, political science classes are always heated. They love to hear about those union workers. It's good that we had some representation out in those college classes.
Well, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you'd like to share before we end this interview?
I think you covered everything, Doug.
I did my best for you. Hopefully, like I said, if there's anything you ever want to add, we can always do another each. But it's been a pleasure interviewing you. I appreciate your interview.
Thank you, Mike.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you.